And I...
Recovery doesn't start tomorrow.
Calling all angels.
Recovery starts right now. And here to help is Rated R for Recovery.
And a good day to everyone that's here today at Rated R and Rated R for Recovery.com. And I'm here joined by my multi-talented assistant, Jennifer. How are you doing today?
I'm doing amazing. How are you, Al?
I was doing good until I forgot the computer today, and then I was going behind someone who was doing 2 miles an hour all the way here. Well, then I realized why they were going 2 miles an hour, because they were in the right lane that I wanted to be in, but it was flooded because it had rained a lot. So did anybody come through like a little bit of flooding on the way here?
I came with my ARC.
You came with your ARC? Oh, yes. That's cool. Well, in case you don't know, Rated R for Recovery and at RatedRForRecovery.com is recorded in front of a live audience. Thank goodness we have faces for radio.
I didn't do my hair.
So that's a good thing. So just to show that we're in front of a live audience, if you guys could clap and let us know you're alive.
Look at all those beautiful people out there.
Right.
Hi, guys.
Well, today, folks, thank you very much for that. Today, we're going to have an awesome show. I'm filling in for Mr. John, who's out on the road, but we're going to have a good time today.
Oh, we always do.
Yeah,
we're like the dynamic duo, you and I.
Yeah, we're just going to get rid of John. We're going to, John, we're taking
He's
over.
He's listening. Shh. Don't tell him. If you repeat it, we'll deny it.
I think he was in Vermont last time. I don't know where he's at now, but
who knows?
World traveler. Anyway, we're going to talk about some cool stuff today, something that's kind of been on my heart, and I've been kind of delving into this idea of, is addiction a disease or is it a choice?
Oh.
Yeah. Kind of interesting.
Boom goes the dynamite.
And we've got a couple people that we're going to talk to about that. And first and foremost, we're going to talk to Brian and hear his story. And why don't I let you kind of take over for a little bit, and we'll kind of bring Brian in.
Well, you know, this is a very hot topic for me, this whole addiction, disease versus choice kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see where that goes. We have a couple of articles and some amazing speakers. I can't wait to hear from Miss Dana. And our first guest is Brian. I'm so excited that he's here. It just kind of happened that way. We didn't really plan it, did we?
No, not at all.
Oh, my goodness. So let me tell you about Brian, right? So when I first started coming around to this fellowship, there was this little group of people that were close in age to me. I don't want to say my age because I'm an old lady, but close in age to me, because the only other people I was hanging out with were like in their 70s. I love the old crusties, right?
Yes.
So Brian was there with three other of his little friends that were boys and a couple of the girls. Gosh, I miss those guys. I don't get to see them much anymore.
Me too. I miss them a lot.
And it just goes to show you that over the last 6 or 7 years, people sometimes get stuck and they don't come back. So here I am, brand new, and I think Brian just celebrated maybe almost a year at that point, I think. And I was a little angry, let's just say.
A little?
A little. And I would come into these meetings and Brian would say, "Hey, welcome, how are you?" I'm like, "How are we? How do you think I am?" And I would just yell and cry and scream and snot. But I kept coming because those guys, Brian and all those old crusties and some of our friends back then at that time, you guys looked so happy and everybody was smiling and like there was this camaraderie, and I finally felt maybe that I could fit in. So to have him sit here next to me tonight and give his testimony is very amazing and just overwhelming, and I'm so excited he's here. So without further ado, I give you Brian.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you. I am an alcoholic. My name is Brian.
Hi, Brian.
The last time I took a drink was March the 12th of 2013. And after my last drink, I decided it was going to be a good idea for me to lay down and go to sleep forever. So I took a bunch of pills and with a bottle of booze, and I didn't want to live anymore. And then I woke up and I got committed to a mental facility, And
now when you say committed, did you just show up and say, hey guys, you have an opening?
No, it's a thing called the Baker Act.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
the old Baker Act.
Yeah, I didn't know what it was until then.
It's not two guys baking that
not at all.
Nobody baked cupcakes here in this scenario, did they?
No, not at all.
So just for those people who are listening around the country, the Baker Act, in California they call it a 5150. Each state they say something different. In the state of Florida, a Baker Act is an involuntary commission for at least 72 hours to an inpatient psychiatric facility pending further evaluation. So I'm guessing you lost your shoelaces and your underwear.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. You were deemed a danger to yourself or others,
yes,
right?
Okay. Mostly to myself.
Correct.
At the time. Mm-hmm. But I was a danger to most people because I was being very, dangerous to other people by driving.
All right, Brian, can we kind of, all right, so let's do a little rewind, all right? Because
okay.
We were kind of getting into motivations and mental health and a lot of stuff before the show, and so let's take your life back. You know, it's kind of interesting in this idea of addiction, a disease or a choice. There's this disease model of addiction that says it's a disease and it's comprised of three different things: environmental factors, biological factors, and behavioral factors. All right.
Okay.
So let's look back on your life growing up. I mean, let's talk about some of the environmental factors, all right, that were part of your life. Do you think anything in your environment predisposed you to addiction?
Yeah, there were alcoholics and drug addicts in my family, and I saw how much fun they were having, and I knew that I wanted to try that someday.
Oh, just a barrel of laughs.
But that's a testament, because that's not only is that a genetic predisposition, which speaks to the biological piece, but there's also that environmental factor. You're observing it while you're growing up.
Yeah.
Just because somebody's born from parents that are alcoholics, maybe they get adopted into a family that are the Cleavers and they never show signs of alcoholism. But for somebody who has that genetic predisposition and then is subsequently exposed to it, now we're at a higher risk.
So that's a high risk factor.
Yeah.
All right. So you grow up in this family, see a lot of people around you, people close to you, I guess, real close to you?
Well, my grandfather used to take me to bars when I was a very young child.
Really?
He would tell my mom and my grandmother that he was taking me to play, and I would go to the Mansfield Inn in New Jersey.
Wow, no kidding.
Oh, my.
So what age did you start drinking? I mean, what was your first drink?
I don't remember my first drink, but I remember, because I used to steal nips from my dad all the time.
Okay.
You know, I would open a beer for him and drink it.
Okay.
And then, but my first real drunk, probably around 11 or 12,
yeah, that's pretty common.
With my friend's dad's beer.
So what other factors would you say contributed to your maybe predisposition towards going down a road like that? What was going on in your head?
I just liked that when I put the chemicals into my body, I didn't feel anything. And I just wanted to be numb all the time.
Yeah, and just numb out.
Yeah, and you know.
Okay, wait, what do you mean? You didn't feel anything.
No, I grew up.
What do you
up,
mean?
I was bullied a lot as a kid.
Okay, all right.
I was bullied a lot, and I tried to fit in a lot because I had a lot of things wrong with me. First of all, at the time, I was in a school in New Jersey where I was the only redhead in the school besides my little sister.
For those of you at home who are listening, Brian's very gingy.
Yeah, I'm very gingy.
He's a big ginger.
Yes.
He's so white, he's almost blue.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry. Now that everybody has that visual, carry on.
You know, she still has that mean streak in her sometimes.
There it is. It came out again. Hasn't fully died yet.
Yeah.
Oh, I said that out loud. Okay, sorry.
And I had problems, you know. I was a little fat, and, you know, people would just pick on me. If I could tell you how many times I was called a carrot top or a lot of other things that I can't say on the radio.
Okay, so self-image.
Yeah, right. Self-image.
So your self-image was pretty much in the toilet.
Yes.
And so when you drank, what happened to your thoughts of self?
Oh, I didn't care anymore. I just wanted to drink or drug as much as possible to get those feelings out of me. And when those things happened, I became the life of the party because I didn't care.
Okay, so here's the thing that I'm noticing the more I study this disease versus addiction thing. It doesn't start off as a disease, but it becomes a disease almost, mm-hmm. right? So it's a choice at first, but once that reward center of the brain, mm-hmm. right,
100%.
Starts feeling this different way. In your case, you wanted to be numb. In other cases, people feel socially awkward, right? Mm-hmm. There's something about you don't like about you, so you need to do something to medicate it. And when you do it, that reward center kicks in, and then I think it can even actually create permanent pattern in the brain, almost a requirement for that.
It does. What happens in the brain, that's why we say in the field that an addiction is an addiction is an addiction is an addiction. Because what the addiction does is, it doesn't matter if it's alcohol, drugs, cocaine's a little bit different as far as the reward center, but what addiction does, sometimes it's food, sometimes it's gambling, sometimes mm-hmm. it's sex, sometimes it's shopping, sometimes it's stealing. What happens in the brain is that there's an immediate rush of dopamine and epinephrine and norepinephrine. So those are hormones that are released by the brain's pleasure center. So it's reinforced constantly. On our own, especially early in recovery, our brain doesn't know how to release those chemicals. It's not sure how to do it by itself. Your brain is sending your messages to your body to go ahead and pick up your drug or your drink of choice because it's like, dude, I don't know how to make this stuff. You just did this behavior for 35 years, and now you want me to make it? That's why people are so depressed early in recovery. That's why we're so lost and so confused. Okay. Because for that first 18 months that we suffer from post-acute withdrawal, our brain has no clue how to make dopamine on its own.
Wow. Yeah.
And that's why some of us replace one addiction for another. Yeah, it's great that I didn't drink that first year, but I ate a pint of Ben & Jerry's every night. So now I'm sober and fat. You know, or it's great that I quit using drugs. But
and
then,
a little mean.
Well, just
and
some,
a little mean.
Sometimes,
little
mostly
mean.
It's mostly self-deprecating. But I think, and then sometimes, you know, early in addiction, early in recovery, we say, you know, I'm not doing drugs, but, you know, I'm having sexual relationships with four or five people because I'm using whatever I can to fill that void. I'm using whatever I can to get that dopamine going. And that's why a lot of people say it's a God-sized hole or it's a spiritual program, because we need something to fill that void that's greater than us, that's greater than booze, greater than drugs, greater than gambling, greater than any human power.
You know, I think going back to environment is kind of interesting, you know. So you're predisposing that you got these people that are, you know, massive partiers around you, alcoholics, mm-hmm. whatever, and then you've got this bullying at school. I mean, I could definitely see a young man like that tracking down that road to try to numb self, you know? So, okay, so you do that.
Or to feel invincible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Because well,
I had no fear when I was under the influence of whatever. You know, it didn't matter what it was.
Wow.
You know, whatever drug it was, I've done them all. And they all made me feel differently. But the one common thing with all of them is they didn't make me feel, you know, hurtful.
Bad.
Yeah.
Okay, so
yeah.
how do you blow out the bad air and get in the good air? To get this bad juju out that you're just not good. There's something bad about you. There's something less than about you. You know,
yeah.
Explain the process of how it went from, okay, well, let's first start in the addiction. How bad did it get? Like, what world did you go into?
I went into a few different worlds. There was a lot of times where, you know, I was living in crack houses.
Okay.
You know, I was homeless for a little while. I could not function without alcohol at all. Like, I would wake up in the morning and I'd have to put some alcohol in my system just to get out of bed.
Wow.
And then,
which isn't a testament to the physiological dependence.
Correct.
So there was some withdrawal,
yeah.
shaking,
yes.
sweating.
That's
the
disease kicking.
DTs.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, most of the time I couldn't function without, you know, some kind of alcohol in my system.
Okay.
The last year, it was from sunup till I passed out.
So yeah. Then this horrible depression was there, as you mentioned
yes.
earlier, and you just got to the point where, hey, you wanted to end it.
Yeah, I didn't want to be around anymore. I didn't want to be a burden to anybody else. I just wanted to end it and kill my pain that I was in.
Hmm.
And I knew I needed to stop drinking and drugging. I knew that at the time, but I didn't want to because I knew I was going to have to go through those feelings. And I didn't want to go through those feelings. And I still think about it now. You know, when I was first sober and going through those feelings that I was going through, I hated it. And there was many times where I almost went back because I didn't want to deal with, you know, how I was feeling. And now, you know, I'm grateful that I went through that.
Wow. Okay, so let's talk about through that a little bit. Okay. All right, because that's, to me, people listening in the audience and at home, right? That's where the rubber meets the road. Yeah. There's all kinds of people listening tonight that have all kinds of issues. Mm-hmm. You brought up about 20 different ones, you know, right?
I just throw them
out
there.
And I have most of them,
rambling,
actually.
You know, I think we'd all be lying, right, in the audience and at home. We'd be lying if we didn't say that all of us struggle with something, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of self is tied into there. Mm-hmm. And wanting to, there's whole schools of philosophy on the pleasure pain principle that people say, you know, philosophers have said that human beings want to avoid pain at all costs and have pleasure at all costs, mm-hmm. you know? But then you've got the proverbial story of the person that runs into a burning building, risking life and limb, getting partially burned to save a child. They've somehow overcome that guttural pleasure, pain, human, fault-ridden type of philosophy, you know? And it's just really, really interesting. So let's talk about your kind of emergence, right? From your Baker acted.
Yes.
All right. Almost killed yourself.
Yes.
Tell me what happens then. And bring us into the light, brother.
After I got out of the mental hospital, my mom begged me to go to a meeting. And I told her I would.
What do you mean a meeting? Like
an Alcoholics Anonymous
meeting.
Oh,
like a fellowship meeting.
Yeah, so it was like a moose lodge or something.
Yeah, right? It was a fellowship meeting. And where I grew up, I knew a lot of people, and it just so happened when I walked into my first meeting, I knew the first guy I saw.
Whoa.
No way.
Yeah.
How pivotal was that? Like how?
It was astronomical because he was a really bad drinker, and I saw that he was sober now, and I figured if he could do it, I could do it too.
That's amazing.
Wow.
That's how it works really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's just... And
can we camp on meeting a little bit, not to interrupt you, but
yeah.
Can we camp on this idea of meeting? Like, I mean, let's talk about this. What's so important about being around other human beings? Again, from what I'm seeing, right, you grow up, you kind of have this subtle and then not so subtle isolation.
Yeah.
Where you're not happy with self.
Mm-hmm.
But then you get around a bunch of other people that are kind of the same way.
Yeah, and that's what I need. I need people around me so I don't get stuck in my head, which is the most dangerous place for me to be. You know, I can walk into a fellowship meeting and tell people I'm having a bad day and tell them what my problems are, and I'll get help.
And that blows me away to this day. You know, we can walk into these fellowship meetings and say, oh, I really wanted to punch this person in the throat today. And everybody says, I totally get that.
Yeah.
Or we can talk about stories from the past about how we got Baker acted, and everybody nods their head and says, me too.
Yeah.
We talk about stuff like that out there with those normal folk, we're going to get locked up again.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, yeah. So it's really awesome to be around these people. The idea of fellowship is from ancient times when there was an idea of community. You know, they had these communities where the elders were in charge. You respected each other. If somebody wasn't doing what they were supposed to be doing, everybody met with them. They gathered around them. They fellowshipped with them. You know, it's a way to see your own eyebrows. I can't see my own eyebrows unless I look in a mirror. And when I can't look in a mirror and be honest with myself, I count on those people sitting next to me to tell me about myself.
I agree.
So humans need humans, huh?
All the time. It's so, like Barbara Streisand said.
People need people. That was not the radio,
that was
folks.
Horrible.
In case you thought that was the radio, that was not the radio. We did not break away to Barbara Streisand.
But she's awesome.
But okay, so I'm getting a good vibe now, right, Brian? All right. So
yes.
So you walk into this place, you see someone, a longtime friend you knew that was in rough shape.
Yeah.
Right? And now he's there too, and maybe a little glimmer of hope enters in.
That
right?
was the first time that I really felt that there might be a way out of how I was feeling.
Oh, I get goosebumps whenever
that's
you say
awesome.
That. Yeah.
Okay, so keep tracking towards the light. What happens next to bring you out of the dark, right?
I started doing the work. You know, I started, you know, working the steps in the fellowship, and I went to three or four meetings a day, and I was just open with people. I got friends.
Ooh.
And that we used to sit around at Starbucks and just complain to each other all day long about how we still wanted to drink. But we were there for each other, and it helped us not drink. And we would always say that we wanted to go drinking, but we were going to go to a meeting first, and then we would go drinking after the meeting.
Okay. So let's talk about work. A lot of people talk about that, doing the work. I'm a little sketchy on that, right? Because if I'm out there and I'm an alcoholic or I'm a drug addict and I'm listening to this show, and you say, "Oh, yeah, I started doing the work." Oh, I don't want to work. What do you mean work? I mean, what do you get from the work? What does work do? What is work designed to do to your head? I mean, let's go to why work is important.
Work is, for me, it helped me see that there's a different way of life, a different, you know, that I could live without having to drink or drug. Mm. You know, it working with my sponsor and just sitting there and talking to him about issues that I was going through in my mind and my heart and in my life, it just made it so much better. Because before, I used to just put everything down inside. And now, you know, anytime I have a problem, I can talk to him about it. But as far as the work, it's just doing the 12 steps.
Mm-hmm. And the work is everything.
Yeah.
You know, I think sometimes as people new in recovery, we're like, I don't want to have to work at this. If that was the case, then everybody would get sober. If it was enough to spontaneously get sober, we would all say, poof, we're sober now. Yeah. Recovery isn't always for people that need it. It's for people not necessarily that want it. It's for people that work really hard at it. Because for the better part of more than half your life, you spent it drinking and drugging, right?
Well, I did not. I was on something every day
all
for
the time.
25 years.
And Brian said he first started kind of drinking when he was 12. So even though the physical craving is gone, the mental and emotional sobriety is a 12-year-old. And a 12-year-old in a 30-year-old body looks weird.
Oh.
Right?
Wow.
So we have to do the work for emotional sobriety.
Okay. So, but the work is, and this is why I don't like the word work.
Okay, let's call it something else.
Exactly.
Life skills.
The process.
Well,
let's
love that.
Okay. Let's call, instead of calling it work, why don't we call it, we're embarking on a new road to change the way we think.
Oh, I like that. That is,
it's
awesome.
A paradigm
shift.
It's a shift from thinking one
way.
You
said the P word.
To a new way. Yeah, it's a paradigm shift. It's
100%.
It's a new way of thinking. It's like an aha moment. You know.
We call that the sound that your head makes when it's coming out of your butt.
Yeah. Okay, so you can't see this on at home, but I'm holding up my phone and it's like a blocker. All right? So you didn't want, this is a wall that we put up in our emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't want to feel bad things about ourselves. So, you know, you said one of the things that kept you back a lot is you knew that you'd have to lower that wall down and you'd have to feel those feelings.
Yes.
And see, that's what rethinking does, and that rewiring to me. That's what work is. It's not work in the traditional sense.
Right.
It's attendance. It's attending to your own self and attending to a way to think about life differently.
But
so
here's
you can
the deal.
You can breach those things, but you can't just sit at home and do nothing.
No.
You have to go through the process.
But when you let that wall down, it happens early on. As soon as you take the drink and the drug away, unfortunately, that floodgate opens. And why we lose so many people early in sobriety. Because once that floodgate opens, every single feeling comes rushing back. And we're emotionally stunted. We started drinking at 12, 13, 14 years old. And every feeling we've been trying to avoid comes flooding back. And that's when we lose a lot of people early in sobriety. The worst thing we do is when we pick off our own.
Let's pick up on that after the break. We got to take our break now, but I want to just end with one thing. Everybody give Brian a hand, by the way. It takes
courage to
come up and share. Brian, you're awesome, man. You're a good dude. Listen, let me just ask you this. Okay, so we talked a little bit about a spiritual experience, right? So I'm a big believer in that something greater than ourselves is really needed in all of our lives, right? So just real, I mean, real short. We don't have much time, but tell me just briefly about that a little bit in your life.
Oh, the way I feel inside now is a complete 180 from the way I felt before, and it's because I found a belief in a higher power, and my spirituality. It happens all the time. I could go into the story about my spiritual experience, but it would take a little while.
But it's an awesome story. For anybody who knows Brian or has time to interact with him, especially after the show, you should do that. It was an inspiration to me.
Yeah, and I usually do it with music, you know, just listening to different songs and letting those emotions out. I think that's...
So let me ask you something. How do you feel today?
Oh, I'm the happiest man on the face of this earth. I mean, mm-hmm. I could never explain to you how happy I am and how...
What has not drinking given you?
Everything. Mm-hmm. Everything. It's given me my life back. It's given me the respect and the love of so many people, and to know that they really do love me and I love them, and that's basically what it's taught me. It's taught me.
I love those stories. Yeah. It's good news,
Brian,
my
makes
brother.
Me Let's cry give me a... every time you share.
Right. Folks, you've been listening to Rated R for Recovery, RatedRforRecovery.com. We went just a little bit long in this segment, but Brian, it was worth it, man. You're a treasure. We're going to break to a commercial break, and we'll be back right after this word from our multiple sponsors.
Awesome. All right, come back.
Lifehouse Sober Living was established in 2010 for both men and women. Located in Southwest Florida, clients will be given the opportunity to grow and establish themselves in a recovery-based living community. We believe that Lifehouse Sober Living can help any recovering addict or alcoholic transition from detox, treatment, jail, even homelessness. Live life independently without drugs or alcohol through our three core values: compassion, accountability, and structure. We are Lifehouse Sober Living. Find out more at lifehousesoberliving.net or visit them on Facebook.
Have you been considering a kitchen renovation or bathroom remodeling? There's no one better to call than the professionals at Honey's Construction. Value, beauty, and functionality. Get the right design for your kitchen or bathroom and add significant value to your home. Call Honey's Construction today at 229-4934 for a free in-home consultation. Honey's Construction's purpose and mission is to fulfill dreams and to be grateful for the many blessings we enjoy each and every day. 229-4934.
Gulf Coast Men's Health, specializing in erectile dysfunction, prostate issues, diabetes, heart conditions, BHP, all factors, and ED. Even if you are on a heavy medication list when Viagra and Cialis are no longer effective, the $99 visit will include doctor's visit and test medication. If you're not happy with the medication, the visit will be free of charge. Taking appointments now. Open Monday through Friday. Call 239-245-7840. Gulf Coast Men's Health, Center Point Drive, Suite 110 between Winkler and Colonial Boulevard, Fort Myers.
Not everyone has the luck of the Irish. If a friend or family member is in trouble, call Shamrock Bell Bonds. Put our number into your phone, 239-332-2245, 239-332-2245, or go online at gobailmeout.com. Shamrock Bell Bonds provides fast, reliable service. Shamrock Bell Bonds, 1528 Broadway, downtown Fort Myers. Look for the Shamrock, and maybe luck will be on your side.
Are you looking for a safe, sober living environment? Serenity Recovery Living was established for the purpose of providing a temporary, safe, and healthy environment, plus affordable living arrangements for recovering addicts and alcoholics emerging out of treatment centers and or institutions to help its members make the transition into productive members of society. Serenity Recovery Living is a board-certified safe house for people in early recovery. Contact us at 866-577-5166 or visit our website at serenityrecoveryliving.com. Helping one person at a time, one day at a time.
Have you been charged with a crime? You could face serious penalties for conviction, and it is vitally important that you have skilled legal assistance on your side during this time. Call Brian L. Edwards, Esquire Attorney at Law today, 888-512-6254. Results matter. With a track record of success, our methods are tried and true. Mistakes happen, but we can help. Brian L. Edwards, Esquire, Attorney at Law. Visit FortMyersCriminalLawFirm.com or call 888-512-6254.
Are you tired of the revolving door? Come home and experience the Ryan Hope House difference. We are a 501c3 nonprofit holistic women's recovery house in a safe and convenient South Fort Myers location. We offer hope, help, and healing for the mind, body, and spirit. Our mission is to see individuals regenerated into the wholeness in which they were created before the devastation of addiction. We offer counseling, 12-step support and accountability, enrichment classes, housing, and food. Call us today at 1-855-RYAN-911 or visit our website at ryanhealingcenter.com. Now is the time to regenerate your authentic nature.
Every week, Grace United Methodist Church hosts Celebrates Recovery at two separate locations. On Monday night at 6:45 at the corner of Edison and Grand Avenue, Fort Myers. Then on Friday night, Cape Coral at the corner of 21st and Hancock Bridge Parkway. Celebrate Recovery is to encourage fellowship and celebrate God's healing power in our lives. We work our way along the road to recovery by accomplishing the 8 principles of Celebrate Recovery. We grow spiritually. We are free from our hurts, habits, and hang-ups. For more information, visit eGraceChurch.com.
Music is the way to get right through.
Welcome back to Rated R for Recovery.
And welcome back to Rated R for Recovery at RatedRForRecovery.com. And we are joined by Dana. Hi, Dana.
Hi, Dana.
Let's give her a hand. And we're going to talk to her a little bit more in a minute. But before we do, we're going to do recovery in the news. And I actually have something to share, but you share yours first. I got a little blurb. But
me first, you
yeah,
first?
Yeah, you go first because it's your segment.
Awesome. Beauty. I know, I need like that kind of like intro.
We do have one. We do have one. It's just not engineered yet.
Well, in honor of Mental Health Awareness Week, for those of you who don't know, Mental Health Awareness Week is from May 13th to 19th. And for some reason, there's still stigma and discrimination that surrounds mental health issues. People with mental health problems say that the social stigma that's attached to mental health and illness and the discrimination that they experience makes things so difficult for them to recover, whether it's access to treatment, whether it's talking about it, whether it's kind of being honest and transparent, whether it's seeking out services, whether it's a financial block, or even if it's just that stigma that they're going to be judged. For some reason, in 2019, we still have to have conversations about why people with mental illnesses are being discriminated against, and that is absolutely discouraging and disheartening. And 1 out of 4 people will experience a mental health problem at some point in their lives, just like 1 out of 4 people experience an addiction. Some of those people have both. It's been my experience personally and professionally that it's really difficult to judge somebody and say, oh, you just have an addiction without any mental health issues being present. Rates of self-harm and depression are on the rise, and over 450 million people worldwide have mental health issues or disorders. Most people who experience these problems can recover fully if they're able to talk about it and have the resources and get the help that they need. So as we approach Mental Health Awareness Week, May 13th to 19th of 2019, remember, if 1 out of 4 people are suffering from a mental illness, every time you're at the grocery store, every time you're at a family function, you're at work, you're at a party, maybe it's you, somebody is suffering. You never know what's going on the inside, so be kind always.
Be kind always. I yes. like it. Well, I'm not going to share mine because that was a perfect lead-in to our guest, Dana. Can I say your last name? Is that okay?
Fogelsong.
Dana Fogelsong.
Just right. Sounds pretty.
Well, yeah, that's a cool name. Isn't there? There's a famous Fogelsong out there, isn't it?
I think like it's Fogelberg.
Dan Fogelberg, mm-hmm. Minstrel type singer, whatever. That's a cool sounding name. But you know, Dana, tell us a little bit about your a past, just as far as like your professional past. And kind of what you do. We're not going to get into where you work, but tell me what you do.
Well, for about the last 9 years, I've been involved in leadership positions, working on the substance use and mental health side. So I've worked in state government, worked on the managed care side and nonprofits, kind of really promoting the idea that recovery is possible for everybody.
Yeah, now when you say recovery, now we're going to make a little shift here, folks. We're going to make a shift from recovery from drugs and alcohol, although there's quite a lot of overlap here, but we're going to focus a little bit more, a lot more with you on mental illness.
You guys did hear Brian say he got Baker acted, right?
Yeah.
And we did talk about how that was an involuntary psychiatric hospital stay, right? Okay, sorry. Yeah.
So there's
just
some
checking.
Huge overlap here. She used the word stigma, and I don't know if before the show, that's what I told Dana I wanted to lead with. So let's talk about the stigma of mental health. You know, you made the comment of the difference between the stigma of mental health versus the stigma of addiction. Explain that for us.
Well, I think that people in recovery from addiction sort of wear it as a badge of honor, right? You know, so it's okay to talk about that when you're in recovery, but I don't think people like to talk so much about being in recovery from mental illness. And if you look at sort of our treatment system, you've got a lot of CEOs sort of on the addiction side who are very open about being in recovery.
Right, right.
You don't ever see people saying, yeah, I'm in recovery from bipolar disorder, schizophrenia. We just don't.
That's true. You know, like a famous rock musician who's now like sober, and you know they're letting everybody. But yeah, you're right. There's a bit of a stigma there. Why is that? I mean, let's climb into this a little bit. Why is there a stigma about mental illness in your estimation?
I think that people are scared of it. So you know, you said 1 in 4. That's the statistic, and I think people are scared that it's going to happen to them. So I think it's just. I think there's just a lot more shame around it, and I'm hoping that that will change.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about you and your past. What led you towards this career that you've had for so many years? Obviously, you know, I do have to share. I was kind of shocked a few weeks ago when I did a show, and I asked a guy, you know, why he's involved in doing many things in recovery, and he's done. I don't know how many homes he's opened up, tons of them, and he eventually shared. I said, you know, where does this all come from? And he basically said to our audience that my wife died of an overdose in my arms. And you know, very few people really, it was shocking to me. And just when he looked in my eye and said that, that was powerful. You know, those powerful human experiences. So what were the powerful human experiences that shaped you?
Yeah, so I was 18 years old when I first got my first diagnosis. It started off with anxiety and depression and then went into psychosis. And at 18, I was actually, similar to you, handcuffed, put in shackles in the back of a police car, and actually was sent to a state hospital. So I've actually had a couple of state hospitalizations for mental illness. Eventually got on disability. I was told by a psychiatrist that I was never going to get better and got on disability. And then I spent...
Wait a minute. You were told by a psychiatrist you were never going to get better.
Yes, and that actually happens often. I know many colleagues who have been told the same thing.
Wow, that's
back in the day, and I'm not trying to say that you're older. I'm probably the old lady of the group, but there was a time period where a lot of people were receiving disability for mental illness because when it got to the point where it was debilitating, without treating it properly, people were saying, you know what, go on disability, you don't need to work. There was a time where people were getting disability for an opioid dependency or a chemical dependency or alcoholism. So the system in the 70s and the 80s was constructed as such, where we were flooding SSDI, Social Security Disability, with people that had mental health issues and substance abuse disorders. So right away, and we want to know why there's a stigma, right away Dana's telling us a story about her first experience and diagnosis involved handcuffs, shackles, a state hospital, and
you're
disability.
And you're never going to recover. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's a wonderful platform for the rest of your life. So what happens after that?
Good luck with all that, girl.
So low expectations set in, and basically I was receiving services, but it was basically maintenance and stabilization. There was no talk about, you know, hopes and dreams. So I cycled for many years in and out of crisis stabilization units, sometimes in handcuffs. Sometimes I learned to go on my own and pack my own bag so that I could wear pants that I wanted to wear. And, you know, I'm really actually kind of surprised that I'm still here, because that's how much I didn't want to be on this earth. Mm-hmm. And actually, one of the reasons I credit being alive is that I got the chance to work with a peer specialist. And this gentleman didn't have the same diagnosis as me, but struggled with some pretty serious mental health challenges. But unlike me, he had a full-time job, he had a wife, he had kids, he had connections in the community, he had meaning and purpose in his life. Mm-hmm. And I looked at him and he was really the first person I never knew that had a mental illness but was living well in recovery, and I thought, wow, if he could do it, I could do it.
So now when you say peer specialist, I hear sponsor. Mm-hmm. When you say peer specialist, I hear accountability group in the fellowship. So for those people listening, tell us a little bit about what a peer specialist is in the mental health world.
Sure. Well, it's very similar in the fact, we kind of get what peer support is. In sort of traditional service settings, a peer specialist is someone who either has a lived experience of recovery from mental health or substance use or both, and uses those experiences to help other people. But awesome. It's a paid role. So it's, for me, I've actually made a career out of it. So I've became certified as a peer specialist 9 years ago, and pretty much every position that I've had is working in either a peer capacity or, expanding the peer workforce.
That's so amazing. Your despair actually led you to the point of self-harm also?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Self-harm, a generalized term, can happen in many different ways. So what's strange to me is almost incredible is to see you seem very well adjusted. You kind of have your head screwed on probably better than a lot of us here. So
people are staring at me, and they're pointing.
It's so good to see, and you made a comment before the show that I wanted to follow up on, and I think this is so important. We celebrate recovery of people recovering, but there seems to be what you termed before as this maintenance mode. Mm-hmm. How did you term that? That it's not really about recovering; it's about maintaining.
Yeah.
Explain that.
So once the psychiatrist, put that big statement over me, and I have to say, there has never been words spoken over my life that have been as powerful as that.
Wow.
And once you sort of get on disability for mental illness, I think the thinking shifts from the service provider. So at this point, there's no chance that you're ever gonna.
We're not gonna water that dead plant.
Yeah. So, no one ever expected me to have a full-time job, get a master's degree, own a home, all those things.
Wow.
They're very low expectations. And so I think, on the mental health side, we really get into the maintenance stabilization mode, just kind of keep them alive, and that's why you often see the over-medication. Mm-hmm. There's a huge reliance on medication management, and very few people really get, services like therapy, chances to actually talk about the emotions.
I was
going to
ask you that. Did anybody ever look at you and say, how do you feel about this? What do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to do? Did anybody at that cell tell the 18, 19, 20-year-old Dana, anything that was going to give you a little glimmer of hope at all?
No, and that's really what drives my work. I want to see it change. I think
good
if I would have had that at a young age, I wouldn't have spent 10 years suffering and almost dying. I really believe that people need an opportunity to talk about what they're experiencing and not get the message that you just need medication to fix it. And then when the medication doesn't work, you start to lose hope, so they give you more medication. So I work in the system. I believe in the treatment system.
Mm-hmm.
But I do hope that people start, shifting some thinking. And I think there's a lot of fear that will set people up for failure, right? If we let them sort of dream these big dreams for themselves. But I think that's the key to recovery.
But now you're a person.
Oh,
absolutely, that is the key. And you're somebody, you said you have a master's degree, you've worked in the public sector, you've worked in the private sector, you've worked in the government sector, so that kind of covers all of those. A homeowner, somebody who's a peer support specialist. And, we have people, and it's so sad because they're entertainers, but people like Lady Gaga and all these other people kind of stepping out and getting in front of mental illness. We should feel as comfortable looking at each other and saying, I need to go see a therapist, or who do I talk to about this problem? We should feel as comfortable as that as we do talking about anything. Talking about, I'm going to go to mani-pedi today, or Brian needs a haircut, or whatever it is. Talk about it in a proactive sense before it gets to the point where it's so debilitating. So we talk about the stigma from the general population. What about the stigma that doctor gave you at 18? It starts with the providers and kind of trickles its way down. I met a psychiatrist once who I absolutely adore, who's still in practice in Naples, and he said, Jen, if I'm giving somebody more than two or three medications, I've misdiagnosed them. If because the medication is only one piece of the pie. It's a holistic approach.
That's
much
right.
Like the fellowship, medication is one piece and talking is another piece, and the talk therapy, for some people it's equine therapy, it's job skills, it's resources, it's all of these things instead
what
of just over-medicating.
What did you find, Dana, in your world was the pieces of the pie that came together that it allowed you to overcome?
Well, once I had hope that my situation could get better, I started to take personal responsibility in my life. So, at a certain point, everybody did everything for me. I didn't even wear a watch. I didn't know when I needed to be any place.
Wow.
And when I had that hope, I started to do little things. And eventually, I learned that it's basic stuff. It's sleeping enough. It's eating healthy. It's, moving your body. I find my faith, meditation is really powerful, surrounding myself with positive things. So I kind of almost live in a bubble besides healthcare news. I don't know about sort of a lot of things that are going on, and that's just kind of to protect myself because I know that I can go to a dark space when I hear things that are sad. So it's really all about self-care. And
that's
awesome.
I think
that applies to everybody. I mean, everybody has mental health, and we all need to be working to make sure that stays good.
Mm-hmm. I agree. When I was living in Maryland, I worked for the state, and Maryland is a little bit different. They call their Department of Mental Health and Hygiene. And I always thought that sounded so funny. They said, like, mental health and hygiene.
Hygienic.
Like, and I just always have this visual of flossing my brain. And I worked for Governor O'Malley at the time in the state of Maryland, getting some funding to do some pilot programs in the prison system, which is a whole other show. And, they said that that's what this is about, Jen. It is mental health and hygiene. We have to take care of our mental health. It's not just about people who have a diagnosis and now we have to be, proactive so they don't have a lapse or they don't kind of go back to that dark place. It's about people every day. What do you guys do for self-care? What do you do when you decompress? What do you do when you see crazy politicians talking on the news or you get stuck behind the slow lady in the lane and you're, ready to what do we do?
I have to go fishing on a regular basis.
There
it's the
is,
weirdest thing.
But that's
thing.
Part of your therapy.
Oh, my brother Steve, who's coming up next. Yeah, he's into that. Dana, I hope you come back again.
I
your
do
story's
too.
Inspirational.
You are amazing.
Let's give her a hand.
Thank you.
Very inspired.
You are so inspirational.
We're going to pay the bills and get with our sponsors. Folks, you've been listening to Rated R for Recovery at RatedRForRecovery.com.
Lifehouse Sober Living was established in 2010 for both men and women. Located in Southwest Florida, clients will be given the opportunity to grow and establish themselves in a recovery-based living community. We believe that Lifehouse Sober Living can help any recovering addict or alcoholic transition from detox, treatment, jail, even homelessness. Live life independently without drugs or alcohol through our three core values: compassion, accountability, and structure. We are Lifehouse Sober Living. Find out more at lifehousesoberliving.net or visit them on Facebook.
Have you been considering a kitchen renovation or bathroom remodeling? There's no one better to call than the professionals at Honey's Construction. Value, beauty, and functionality. Get the right design for your kitchen or bathroom and add significant value to your home. Call Honey's Construction today at 229-4934 for a free in-home consultation. Honey's Construction's purpose and mission is to fulfill dreams and to be grateful for the many blessings we enjoy each and every day. 229-4934.
Gulf Coast Men's Health, specializing in erectile dysfunction, prostate issues, diabetes, heart conditions, BHP, all factors, and ED. Even if you are on a heavy medication list when Viagra and Cialis are no longer effective, the $99 visit will include doctor's visit and test medication. If you're not happy with the medication, the visit will be free of charge. Taking appointments now. Open Monday through Friday. Call 239-245-7840. Gulf Coast Men's Health, Center Point Drive, Suite 110 between Winkler and Colonial Boulevard, Fort Myers.
Not everyone has the luck of the Irish. If a friend or family member is in trouble, call Shamrock Bell Bonds. Put our number into your phone. 239-332-2245. 239-332-2245. Or go online at GoBailMeOut.com. Shamrock Bell Bonds provides fast, reliable service. Shamrock Bell Bonds, 1528 Broadway, downtown Fort Myers. Look for the Shamrock, and maybe luck will be on your side.
Are you looking for a safe, sober living environment? Serenity Recovery Living was established for the purpose of providing a temporary, safe, and healthy environment.
plus affordable living arrangements for recovering addicts and alcoholics emerging out of treatment centers and or institutions to help its members make the transition into productive members of society. Serenity Recovery Living is a board-certified safe house for people in early recovery. Contact us at 866-577-5166 or visit our website at serenityrecoveryliving.com. Helping one person at a time, one day at a time.
Have you been charged with a crime? You could face serious penalties for conviction, and it is vitally important that you have skilled legal assistance on your side during this time. Call Brian L. Edwards, Esquire Attorney at Law today. 888-512-6254. Results matter. With a track record of success, our methods are tried and true. Mistakes happen, but we can help. Brian L. Edwards, Esquire, Attorney at Law. Visit FortMyersCriminalLawFirm.com or call 888-512-6254.
Are you tired of the revolving door? Come home and experience the Ryan Hope House difference. We are a 501c3 nonprofit holistic women's recovery house in a safe and convenient South Fort Myers location. We offer hope, help, and healing for the mind, body, and spirit. Our mission is to see individuals regenerated into the wholeness in which they were created before the devastation of addiction. We offer counseling, 12-step support and accountability, enrichment classes, housing, and food. Call us today at 1-855-RYAN-911 or visit our website at ryanhealingcenter.com. Now is the time to regenerate your authentic nature.
Every week, Grace United Methodist Church hosts Celebrates Recovery at two separate locations. On Monday night at 6:45 at the corner of Edison and Grand Avenue, Fort Myers. Then on Friday night, Cape Coral at the corner of 21st and Hancock Bridge Parkway. Celebrate Recovery is to encourage fellowship and celebrate God's healing power in our lives. We work our way along the road to recovery by accomplishing the 8 principles of Celebrate Recovery. We grow spiritually. We are free from our hurts, habits, and hang-ups. For more information, visit eGraceChurch.com.
Music is the way to get right through.
Welcome back to Rated R for Recovery.
Oh, and welcome back to Rated R for Recovery at ratedrforrecovery.com. And we've got old friends Steve and Patrick. Give it up.
All right.
Woo! And hey, listen, man. There's a little connection here I didn't realize.
Yeah, I'll tell you a little secret. That the guy in the room that he, I was that guy.
Steve was the guy. The guy that he walked in and said, if he can do it, I can do it.
That was me.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
No God working there, huh?
What?
Boy, that's a God sighting and a half, man. Guys, go for it, man. We love every time
love
you come.
You.
Do something cool, man. Rock.
Just to say one more thing.
Yeah.
I was the guy he had his first drink with.
Wow.
I just want to keep the high feeling.
47 yeah. years ago.
47 years, and we're
and
still...
And God willing, at the end of next month, I'll finish my 13th year of recovery, so...
Yeah.
Yes.
That's what I'm talking about. Let's hear it, guys.
Come to time when you're drifting. Come to time when you settle down. Come to night. Well, oh, now this old world keeps spinning round. It's a wonder tall trees ain't laying down. There comes a time. There comes a time. You. There comes a time,
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, one more. When you're involved in the drug world, one day turns into the next, which turns into the next, which turns into the next, and before you know it, time fades away. Morphine junkies, too weak to work, yeah. One cell diamond, full months at work, yeah. Down on Pain Street, disappointment lurks. Well, son, don't be home too late. Try to get back by 8. Now, son, don't wait. How time fades away, time fades away. You know how time fades away. Time fades away, you know how time fades away. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Old friends, that was old friends. Guys, thanks again
thank
for coming.
So much.
What a show.
That
was great
amazing.
To connect with everybody. Brian, it was
great
to hear your story.
Let's give it up. Brian, my good friend over here.
Dana, a true inspiration, overcoming many things.
Dana,
brilliant.
Awesome.
Brilliant.
Unbelievable.
Folks, join us next week. You've been listening to Rated R for Recovery at RatedRForRecovery.com. And God bless every one of you. Take care.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to Rated R for Recovery. To find out more, give us a visit at RatedRForRecovery.com.